It's 10 o'clock on Saturday. Why don't we pick this
up on...
Do you
know anything about sensory deprivation tanks? Specifically how to build one?
Sensory deprivation? What is this for?
Fun.
Okay. Well, why don't we talk about it Monday after school, okay?
You always say we should never stop being curious.
To always open any curiosity door we find.
Dustin.
Why are you keeping this curiosity door locked?
Team Kid, Team Teen, and Team Grown-Ups finally join forces as Dr. Brenner and his team of goons gets ever closer to capturing Eleven. Jonathan and Nancy share their findings on the monster with Hopper and Joyce at the sheriff's station and establish contact with Mike and the gang as Dr. Brenner ransacks the Wheeler's house.
Eleven wants to help everyone find Will and Barb, but she needs a flotation tank to amplify her powers. Hopper and Joyce lead everyone to the school where they round up a kiddie pool, 1,500 pounds of salt, and fill the pool with hundreds of gallons of 98.6 degree water.
Eleven psychically enters the Upside Down, where she finds the grisly remains of Barb and a very weak Will clinging to life in the Upside Down version of Castle Byers, the wooden clubhouse he's built in the woods. Joyce tells him to hold on, but the Demogorgon is quickly closing in on his location. Hopper and Joyce are quickly caught by the military police at Hawkins' lab, but Nancy and Jonathan decide to resume their monster hunt and finish what they started. Welcome to Dungeons and Demogorgons, the officially unofficial podcast for Stranger Things on Netflix. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we just finished watching Season 1, Episode 7, titled Chapter 7, The Bathtub. Misleading title, I gotta say. The bathtub is really only featured for a moment.
More like the kiddie pool.
Yeah, it's more like we don't understand how ratios work, and we decided that pure numbers that the math teacher or the science teacher gives us are gonna guide us.
It seems like she needed some room, though. Like, she really
room
went spread eagle to reach out that far.
Yeah, I guess when you don't have the lead weights keeping you down, you gotta really just stretch out.
It's not scientific. It's it's bed, bath, and beyond.
Yeah. What do you think of this episode?
I haven't said this in a while, but I thought this is another one that kind of flew past. Like, there was a relentless pace to... And it is about time. Like, we said in the breakdown that all the teams that we've independently tracking have kind of come together. And it's nice. It's nice to see everybody sharing the bits and pieces of stuff that they know. And for the kids to get a little bit more firepower, you know... But things move so fast that, like, you scarcely have time to cover everything that happened. Like, we didn't really talk in the recap about the pretty awesome chase scene.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We didn't get to talk about Steve's kind of change of heart and break up with his asshole friends. A lot of stuff gets pushed by the base because the plot is advancing very, very quickly, and it feels good.
Yeah, it does. There's a lot of stuff to like here. I think this is one of the best episodes, in my opinion. Like you said, you kind of get just lost in the plot movement, and it feels good. And there are a couple of just straight-up awesome scenes. I think one of the reasons this felt so, like, such a good episode to me is because the kids were kind of doing everything that I expected them to do. I'd say, you know, they'd be in a predicament, and I'd say, okay, now cut through the yards.
Right.
And they would go cut through the yards, and I'd say, hide in the bus, and they'd hide in the bus. Like, it felt like they were doing everything intelligently.
Yeah, they act like smart kids, mm-hmm. doing the things that smart kids would do in those situations, which is, you know, as we've discussed a lot, one of the pleasures of the show.
Yeah.
I even think that tracks true with the older kids, Nancy and Jonathan, that, mm-hmm. You know, when the adults start to... steal their glory, so to speak. They start thinking about, hey, you know what? So got all those bear traps.
That's right. Only in the police station.
What are we going to do with them? But and it's funny because like the adults, because that's the thing about the show is like as I was watching Joyce and Hopper go back to the lab. And he's, like, cutting the fence in exactly the same way. I'm like, what the fuck? Do you think this is going to work the same way twice?
The first time you got caught.
Right. Like, adding Winona Ryder is not going to help. And instantly he's taken captive by the military police. So it's like, okay. Now, like, that's all I really want out of a show. To, like, a person of average intelligence can poke a hole in the problem, and so can the bad guys.
For sure.
And then stretch yourself to come up with a situation of how they can free themselves.
Yeah, it makes me wonder if Hopper has a plan beyond just break in. Like, maybe he wants them to find him for some reason.
I think he was going to make it.
I don't think he can talk his way out of it, but...
Yeah, and, like, how is he going to talk his way into the portal? I mean, I get once you're inside of the portal, you can just dive in and...
Yeah.
Find Will, you know. I don't know, find Will. I'm also a little curious about why they didn't think to try to find a portal near Castle Byers.
Okay.
But I don't think they know how that works. Honestly, I don't.
They've only seen one portal, right?
Right.
Like, although
Nancy and Jonathan have seen it. They've actually been in the Upside Down.
Yeah.
To be fair, I don't understand how all the portals work because, like, one of the big questions I have at the end of this episode is, how did Barb get into the Upside Down at the bottom of that pool?
Mm-hmm.
Like, these portals don't seem like they are too fast to open and close, and we go from her sitting on the diving board to her at the bottom of the pool in the Upside Down.
Mm-hmm.
Did, like...
She just thought it was the drain.
Can Demigorgons just flash a portal in place? Like,
I don't know. I mean, the saving grace here is we just don't know. Right?
No, it's nice that I guess they have that many cards close to their vest that they can still do things to surprise us, and it also it's like it makes sense that the kids like they don't know any more about how this works than we do.
Yeah,
because they're just observing and trying, and I also like the fact that like Nancy and Jonathan are like free with their information about like, oh, so they're attracted to blood. It's like, well, it's just a theory.
Uh huh.
We haven't done any controlled experiments on it yet.
Yeah, the other thing that I'm wondering about with the Upside Down is Elle's connection to it. Is Elle physically there? I mean, she doesn't go through a portal like most people enter the Upside Down. Mm-hmm. She seems to be psychically there. Is she in physical danger when she goes in there?
Or is it like the Matrix rules that if your mind makes her?
Right.
Because to me, the way they're suggesting with this inky black background and just like little bits and pieces, like she's psychically traversing the Upside Down.
And we can see her physical body is still in that pool.
Right. So,
so I
think that the worst that could happen is that she gets really, really scared and would come out of her communication trance or whatnot.
Hmm.
But, you know, there's also a lot of...
We do know there's some psychic toll that takes on her, you know, like she bleeds from the nose when she uses her abilities. Would something equally, you know, in proportion, I guess, happen if the Demogorgon got a hold of her psychically?
Well, and you also got to, I guess the ultimate end to that question is, since this is doing some kind of damage to her, if she used enough of her powers, would it just kill her? Like, would her brain liquefy and roll out her nose?
Yeah. I mean, I assume so.
Yeah. So, I mean, I thought they did a lot of good work with Elle because, like, all those flashbacks of her father kind of abusing her and taking advantage of his, I'm calling her father, Papa, because, you know, that's something we speculated last episode, whether he's her biological father, but, you know, that stuff all pays off because you see her skepticism when Joyce is, like, trying to give her this pep talk while she's, you know, prepping her blindfold is like, you know... Uh-huh. If things get too scary, and a lot of things that we've seen her father say, like, oh, you know, everything will be okay and I'll be there for you. But it works because, you know, Joyce is there. We can see her as she's in the tank. She finds Barb's corpse.
Yeah.
Which let's talk about that here in a minute. She comforts Eleven, and Eleven, instead of every other time, like when she's been with her dad and she just like, you know, shits her pants and runs out of the room, she stays in there and is able to make contact with Will as well.
Mm-hmm.
What are the Demigorgon, is the Demigorgon, I don't know if there's more than one, what is the Demigorgon doing with Beth's body? Is it like an alien type they're spawning inside
with
her?
Barb's body,
it looked like something alive that came out of her mouth, which is fucking gross.
For some reason, I mentally like didn't connect that to the Demogorgon. It was just more like this is a creature from the Upside Down that was
this is a dimension with its own ecosystem.
Yeah, that's how I felt. Because like you see all the slime stuff around, right? I assume that's organic and that it grows and I mean it's all over like Castle Byers.
So let's just run with that theory for a minute because I think it's funny. So the Demigorgons just think with when like a house pops up, that's like a natural feature, like a mountain range.
Yeah, the castle or the house.
Yeah, you know, it's like, hey, this is just a creepy forest, and now there's a subdivision here. What the fuck? What kind of natural phenomenon could cause this?
Yeah, you know, I didn't think about maybe the Demogorgon's just mad that we're destroying its natural habitat.
Right, yeah.
We're urbanizing the landscape
here. They're the psychic spotted owl, and they are
mad.
Because I... You know, I've also developed this working theory that the Upside Down is kind of like this limbo that's between the two worlds. Like, if you look at if you went to the Demogorgon's home world or home dimension, whatever, it would look like just straight up, you know, all the goopy. It looked like an alien den from one of the Alien movies, right? Mm-hmm. But like the neutral zone is kind of like a mix of our two worlds, or what each world seen through the other's prism. Yeah. Because it doesn't make any fucking sense that there's human structures and whatnot in the Upside Down.
Yeah, that swimming pool and Steve's house. And that whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, and it's weird too because when Elle goes in, she seems to be. I'm wondering, like, what is the actual purpose of the water? Because if you look at, you know, the environment that Elle ends up in when she goes to the Upside Down, it's this water floored blackness. You know, so. I assume that it's just a sensory deprivation thing that helps her focus, but there might be more to it. Like, water might be a key component of getting over to that side. I don't know.
I mean, there is a lot of, like...
I mean, she wasn't in the water when she saw the Russian guy, so... When she found him, she was just sitting at a table.
Oh, you're right. You're right. I thought they did put her in the tank when she said, you got to reach out further than you've ever been before.
Oh, I think, yes, they did in that scene, but when she found him the first time, she was just sitting at a table and piped it through the
But that was when the guy was in the same lab. I don't think he's a Russian. I think he was a volunteer that was reading shit, a list of random shit off the paper.
Might be right, but she was still there.
Yeah, I don't know. You're definitely right about her being there. I also, like, speaking of the character development, like, the fact that, like, Lucas and Mike are now reconciled, I liked... there's also some really good moments with, like, Mike and Elle. Like, they have this young romance, and, like, the fact that, like, also it's funny that Elle, who's been raised away from girls and television and movies and radio, still worries about her physical attraction to other boys when she can no longer salvage the blonde wig.
Mm-hmm.
Lucas has got his radio rubber banded to his handlebars.
Uh-huh.
How is he transmitting?
I don't know, a rubber band around transmit button?
But then how is he hearing what the boys are saying?
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, there's like they have this nifty little, like, Radio Shack earpiece that they give to Dustin. So, like, you know, maybe he's got some kind of, like, voice recognition. What do they call that? Talk-to-talk? It's like a push-to-talk?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Voice activated talk. Like, maybe he's got something, but what's going on? What's going on, Lucas?
I don't know.
I don't get that. I did like the bike race. Like, that's a well worn, you know. It's like you've seen it in ET. You've seen it in The Last Action Hero. You've seen it in Final Sacrifice. Here we see it in Stranger Things, and I like how they do reverse ET, because in ET. The psychic alien levitates the children above the threat and away from the threat. And here, the psychic alien, L, takes the threat and fucks it up and launches it in a parabolic arc above the children.
Yeah.
But it was so awesome that, like, and also, Lucas is like, it's awesome. Well, it wasn't awesome when you were the guy flying through there, Lucas.
No, it wasn't.
I bet the guys in the repair truck didn't think it was very awesome.
Yeah. I was super happy that the gang got back together in the cold open, though.
Yeah. Like,
that they brought Lucas back into the fold.
And he apologized for the traitor stuff. She apologized for the lying. And you really do feel like now everybody is getting back together.
Yeah.
I
did find it suspect. Like, how many repairmen, what kind of electrical power and light problem do you have that requires the attention of four vans and, like, 15 repairmen?
I feel like, though, that
in a residential area,
if you saw five or six repair vans out of nowhere with repair dudes, you would be like, huh, I wonder what they're doing. But you wouldn't be like, oh my god, we're being invaded. It'd be unusual.
How many repair vans
not...
before you go, oh my god, we're being invaded? How many?
I don't know.
Is it number eight?
You're
is
right.
Is it 20?
No, it's a lot. Because I would just assume, because I don't open my mail because I pay all my bills online, and, like, I just I try to minimize my fucking destruction, my, like, unless something looks like it's fucking important, and, you know, like, I what I'm getting at is, like, if I get something from the power company. I usually file 13 it because I've got email billing and all that shit. Mm-hmm. So I would just assume, well, shit, I've missed a notice about some neighborhood upgrade to whatever. I wouldn't leap to, oh my God, a government conspiracy is got a stranglehold on our neighborhood. Like you would, how many trucks would you like before you start calling the cops?
I think it's pretty close to the number they had on screen here.
You would call the cops and say, hey, there's a suspicious number of repair trucks on my street.
I think so. And there's a guy in a trench coat leading them. There's some woman who's just dressed like a school teacher out there.
Yeah.
What's going on? Or, I mean, somebody would at least go talk to them and say, hey, that's a lot of repair trucks. What's going on?
Yeah, but I bet they got a smooth answer for all that. Like, if this some joke you neighbor came up and said, I mean, it's one thing if they started, like, fucking tearing up the yards and stuff, but it looks like they were there just to, you know, confiscate all the boys' D&D equipment and kidnap Elle.
Yeah, they were. That's the worst part of this episode.
Well, you know,
all the board games, their walkie-talkie.
If you let, it's a well-established fact in the 80s, if you let young people do Dungeons and Dragons, you'd end up with demons in a real world. And we have demons in a real world. So now, the shit needs to be confiscated and before this gets out of hand. I also like they played like Mike's mom and dad is like, they're going back and forth about, maybe we should trust the government versus, like, because Mike's dad is an idiot.
Oh, my God.
And he's like, well, it's the government, honey. They're here to help. And which this is well into Ronald Reagan's term of office. That's how he got elected. No one says when the government comes calling and says they're here to help. No one feels reassured by that. And she's screaming and yelling and saying, what is this bullshit? And you've turned our house upside down and confiscated all my son's expensive D&D shit. And Dr. Brenner sits down and says, look, it's okay. I just need you to trust me. Do you trust me? And she says, what kind of fucking Jedi mind trick is this? How is that? Like, how is the fact that a guy in a London fog sits down and tells you just to chill?
I don't know. He maybe should have taken the coat off. But yeah, some people just have more trustworthy air about them, I guess. Like, this lady clearly was not cutting it.
Yeah.
And they bring in Dr. Brenner, and all of a sudden, they get all mushy.
She's the good goon. She's the bad goon.
Yeah. I couldn't help but notice how badly Jonathan fucks Steve up.
Oh, man. Like,
Steve's face is mashed.
Yeah. Yeah. That's and only because, he loved Nancy.
Right.
Like, you can tell. You can tell the love came through and the lumps he took in his face.
Uh-huh, when he was calling her a slut and shouting names at
that's
her.
That's the other thing. Is like, I never realized. I mean, I don't understand why Steve was with these guys, because he seemed like I've gone through a full circle of what I think about Steve in these episodes. But
you're supposed to.
But, I always thought it was weird that, like, he's pretty superficial, but he seemed like a bit smarter and fundamentally less cruel than those two.
Yeah, it's ironic that the superficial view of Steve is that he's superficial, right?
Yeah.
Like, underneath it, he's actually got a good heart.
Yeah, kind of. It's, he's got his good parts and bad, like everybody. But, yeah, he's not – I mean, I forget what the name of this couple is, but they're just such reactionary, and they got no imagination. It's like everything in their world fits into some kind of loser slut bracket, and all their combinations are some kind of weird amalgam of those two qualities.
Yeah.
Like, did you see the look in his face when he was beating the shit out of you? It's so weird. Like, you're turning a defeat into a victory because the guy had a weird look on his face.
Yeah.
And you're going to say that he probably had the same when he killed his brother, even though they found... I don't know. They're just so fucking stupid. It makes my brain hurt. Apparently, it makes Steve's brain hurt, too.
Yeah, I'm glad he finally broke up with his horrible friends.
I will say that I don't think that would... I think that he would break up with the friends, but, like, in my experience with the rich little shit in town, they have wide latitude for abusing their friends before their friends. Because, like, they're the ones with the beamer. They're the ones with the parents at the rockin' house that have the parties.
Go on trips, yeah.
You don't want to be on the bad side. You don't want to fuck up the money spigot, man.
Yeah, that's true.
I thought it was, Biff Tanner or whatever the fuck his name was pretty pretty cavalierly throwing away the rich spoiled boys' patronage.
Yeah, maybe he's
going to regret
thought...
that in season two, Biff.
Yeah. He's going to be waxing his car to get back in.
That's right. That money spigot ain't ever going to turn back on. Every time he's waxed his BMW.
Yeah, I guess he just pushed his luck a little too far. I don't know. I don't know. That kid's a shit, though. I don't like him.
Yeah.
The one time, so I talked about how, you know, the kids are doing all the right things according to my brain, you know, hiding in the bus. But then when they get this call on the walkie, this is the one time, the Lando Calrissian example is the one time where Dustin's pop culture logic fails him.
Yeah.
They do answer the thing anyway, but I feel like it's over Dustin's protests.
I mean, that's, yeah, right. I mean, that's like I said, That's why, you know, this, like, we've been talking about game theory a lot on podcasts, and that's why it's such an interesting subject, because you really never know. There's you can only talk about probabilities and percentages. Like, what he was saying about Lando Calrissian is very smart. Like, yeah. That's good advice, but, you know, and I'm not even sure why Mike didn't take it.
Just happened to be wrong.
Like, what?
Yeah.
They never show, and I wish they did, they showed the kids' discussion that finally led Mike to like getting on the mic, mm-hmm. Mike getting on the mic and confirming his their presence, because they cut away, they show the adults and they show Hopper kind of like desperately, angrily trying to use his cop voice on the boys and look like discouraged, like he's giving up, and then all of a sudden Mike responds.
Yeah,
because like I felt like that both Lucas and Dustin were aligned of like, yeah, you can't. Like, and now the cops is there too. Like, there's no way this isn't a Lando Calrissian situation.
Yeah, they almost seem to trust the cops more than Mike's sister. In a way, because somebody was saying like, oh, your sister maybe, but not the chief. I think it was Lucas was saying that.
I wish they had like, I don't know, because it's kind of mysterious, and I think that like I would have bought if Elle could have some kind of empath thing going on, and maybe she gives him the high sign of like, no, I have a good feeling about this one, guys, but and apparently they also, another subtle point is they show, as they're having this back and forth conversation across the walkie talkies, they show a walkie talkie at the Wheeler's house. That's on the mantle.
Right.
Now it's such a quick shot, and Hopper had just put the CB down at a similar location that you'd almost be forgiven that they're just showing, but you're supposed to get the impression that there's a third party listening to it. Obviously the repair truck goons.
Yeah. I'm not even sure why they did that. If they were just going to have Hopper come in and mash them with his fist of fury.
Yeah.
Why even bother?
I don't know, because that's the one thing, like, I want to buy that Hopper just has got this fucking right-handed doom that solves all of his problems.
Uh-huh.
But it does stretch my credibility that he can just get the drop on these heavily armed, like, these guys all have some kind of weird James Bond dart gun. Mm-hmm. Like, does that not work on Hoppers?
Maybe he...
Would they be or less afraid to pop a few sleepy caps in some big dude? And there was a bunch of them.
I think maybe they
spread out.
There was
a bunch. There was like
out.
Three cars full of dudes.
Yeah, I'm wondering if he didn't steal the Trank gun from one of them and just go on
a spree.
Oh, just
Trank the rest of them? I would like to have seen that.
I would too.
Might have been a little too expensive to show that in season one.
Right, a couple of close-ups of darts going in next.
Yeah, because it just
too
seems
expensive.
Like Copper's just a little bit too... Like he's got the invincibility of like a 1980s Arnold Schwarzenegger in a 1980s Arnold Schwarzenegger movie.
Yeah,
like him getting captured by the military police is the first time that he's kind of like not been able to just, you know, bull in a china shop his way through a situation.
Yeah, but I don't think they're going to be as kind to him this time. He's not going to wake up on his couch with a bunch of beer and pills around him.
Maybe it's him and Joyce will wake up naked in his bed with booze and pills all around.
Yep.
At what point after they've caught you and they put you in the bed the next day do you just like, all right,
how many
obviously
times?
Yeah. Yeah, like every single time it happens, when are you going to be like, you know, maybe I am just imagining all this?
Yeah. This is just my weekends, I guess.
They just double down. Like, I'm tired of missing 24 to 48 hours of my life. Fuck Will. He can find his own way out.
I don't know. I'm curious to see what the plan is there, because I feel like Hopper has a plan.
Yeah.
And part of it is to get captured. Because otherwise, man, he's an idiot. He just led them right into the mouth of the beast.
We're talking about Mr. Clark. Out of nowhere, he's got this hot girlfriend that he's putting the moves on a late Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't see that coming.
No.
He is punching way above his Hoosier science teacher weight. And I love how Dustin calls. He's like, how would you make a sensory deprivation chamber? And he's like, oh, let's pick this up. I'm making a moves on a sweet lady. And Dustin's got this line about, you're always talking about we should never leave shut a door of curiosity. Why? What was it? Something about, why are you keeping this curiosity door locked?
Right.
And then next scene is like, you know, he's just taking dictation of how. Like, also.
Yeah, it's great.
I don't know. My experience with Midwestern science teachers is a lot different, but I don't know that I could go up to any of my science teachers and be like, yo, man, plans for sensory deprivation tank, go.
Yeah.
Or like bleeding edge theoretical physics, multidimensional theories, go. And they would be able to dictate me.
Right. That's more like if you're in college and you have a professor, maybe.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about like middle school kids.
He's going to know exactly how much salt to add to, like, or he's got a book on. And this is before the internet. He can't just get on his phone and be like,
no.
You know, neutral buoyancy, average person, parts per gallon. You know?
He's got those equations in his head.
Yeah.
That's impressive. Which makes me wonder, like, what's in his basement?
He's got a sensory deprivation tank.
Yeah.
And hot girlfriend's going to discover it before the end of the night.
Oh, no.
It's going to be
in a good way or a bad way?
Well, you know, you look at Mr. Clark and you tell me.
Uh-huh. Does it involve lead weights? I'm a little worried.
It's going to be like, you know, you might have nightmares about the thing unless you try to cleanse yourself in this nutri-buoyant tank I've got here.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. He seems
Don't worry. You can keep your dress on. Because for some reason, like, the sensory deprivation issue is not, or the sensory deprivation aspect is not disrupted by the dress.
Yeah, I love
how. A big,
how,
weighty, floating piece of cloth around
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I love how this is this works equally, if not better, than the government's multi-million dollar right. bubbly tank with the Abyss helmet and the lead the tunic that she's wearing.
Yeah, and the head, like, they have, like, some head sensor mesh on her when they're doing this. Yeah, none of that's necessary.
Apparently, if Joyce just held her hand during the whole thing, they didn't need any of that shit.
No.
They didn't need any of that shit. If Dr. Brenner actually, like, the key thing is, if he actually cared about Elle as a person, none of this would have ever happened.
Yep. That's about all I got for this episode.
Yeah, I think so.
Castle Byers is, I guess, done. It's mashed. The thing comes after Will.
At the end, you know, Will, I understand you've been in the Upside Down for a good long while now. Several days.
Yeah.
But you can't sing, buddy. You're hiding out from these monsters.
Mistake.
It's a bad idea. Like, I get it. The Clash is cool.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to colonize the Upside Down with rock and roll.
Punk.
It's just not going to work.
No, you're going to get killed before you can really make a dent.
I did like the double heist structure of the last part of the episode, where you see the adults getting ready for their, you know, they're cutting holes in barbed wire or chain link fences, and Nancy and Jonathan are breaking into the police station, getting all their shit. Nancy decides wisely maybe to get a fire extinguisher?
I guess. Why? I don't really know where she's going with that idea, but okay.
They got a can full of gas.
Yeah.
And a handful of matches. Probably not a bad idea to have a fire extinguisher. I mean, has Jonathan impressed you with his capableness thus far? I mean, he did beat the shit out of Steve.
That's the only thing he's done that's really impressed me.
That's the first, and he's a hell of a photographer.
Yeah.
He really knows how to work that lab shit.
I'm all for just burning the Upside Down entirely. Like, if you want to let a fire rage over there, go for it.
Yeah, napalm it. It's the only way to be sure.
Yeah, it's got horrible slugs coming out of people's mouths and demogorgons. None of it's good.
All bad. We have the finale left.
Yeah.
And then we'll be done with season one, ready for season two.
It feels like there's still a lot to resolve in the finale.
I wonder if the last episode is like a double-length episode. I don't know that. I don't know Maybe. That's true. I don't remember, but like, it does feel like there's a lot of stuff to clean up.
Yeah,
because you know, especially since Hopper and Joyce are in a negative position now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, you know, if they were cutting through the fins, I wouldn't assume that they're going to get caught and have to get now they're going to get caught.
Right.
They got to get uncaught, and I don't know. Maybe the theme is the kids are going to be the ones ultimately save the adults this season. Thanks for listening to our Season 1 coverage of Stranger Things. If you like what you hear and want more, check out all of our television, movie, and pop culture content on baldmove.com. If you'd like to help support our podcast and get a ton of bonus content and features, check out club.baldmove.com. We'll also be taking feedback during our upcoming Season 1 wrap-up podcast, so send that in to strangerthings@baldmove.com. You can also discuss this with your fellow fans at forums.baldmove.com or follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Until next time, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.